Hello and welcome to the DeviantArt Podcast Live. My name is Matt Buholtz. You may know me as GG Matt B. And today we've got with us an amazing special guest known for their work on Teen Titans, Icarus and the Sun, and numerous, numerous other projects. Gabriel Piccolo, welcome to the podcast.
Hey there. Thanks for having me.
Hey, man. It's great having you. I'm real excited to get to talk with you today. We've got a ton of awesome things to really talk about and send out to the art community. So I'm excited to have you here.
Awesome.
So one thing that I'd like to do for anyone who may not know you, I'd just love for you to introduce yourself real quick.
I'm Gabriel Piccolo. I'm a Brazilian artist, mostly known, like Matt said, by my Teen Titans work and Icarus and the Sun. My pronouns are he, him. And pode mandar pergunta em português, porque eu também respondo em português, galera. Sorry, I had to give a shout out to Brazil.
I can't blame you, man. If I was from Brazil, I'd probably be shouting out too.
Yeah, I've seen that there's a lot of people commenting in Portuguese. I love it.
Oh, it was great. So we always put out on Instagram, we put places for people to add questions, and we got so many in Portuguese that it was just like, oh, these are great. Like, I put them through the translator. We know what are. So we've got a lot of great questions coming for you. And for everyone watching, know that there is a Q&A at the end of this. So make sure to ask your questions in the chat below. We're pulling them. Our producers are putting those in a doc for us so that we can answer those questions at the end of this podcast. So I want to talk about how you got started to where you are now. I mean, there's that big thing on social, like how it started, how is it going? Like, I love touching on that with artists because I think everyone has such a unique journey. So when did you first like start drawing? What pulled you to art?
I started drawing in high school because it was when I was getting into manga and anime, and I wanted to reproduce, to emulate what I was enjoying so much. I kind of stopped it after I left high school when I started college, and I picked up again when I did the 365 Days of Doodles project, which was I challenged myself to draw every day of the year for the whole year of 2014. And that was basically when I started using social media. It was when I started using Instagram and DeviantArt as my main platforms by that time.
Awesome. So how do you feel like your art has changed from when you started creating, and especially through the Doodles project? How did you see your art evolve during that time?
By the Doodles, when I was doing the Doodles, I just knew how to do inks. Color was a huge challenge for me. It took me a couple of years until I understand a little bit of, like, I'm still not sure of how I do coloring. I just know what I like, so it kind of works out in the end. But it took me a while to get to that point. I think I started feeling comfortable with my style, with my coloring, by 2017. So that was 3 years after the Doodles. And I think a big part of it all is understanding yourself in the process, because I understood who I am as a person, and then I started adding the stuff that I enjoy into my drawings, and that made a huge difference. That kind of made me develop my style.
Yeah, something that people always touch on and always talk about is like, oh, my style, right? Like, that, I think that's the number one question any artist
ever
hears.
People ask me all the time, like, how do I find a style? You already have a style. Your style is basically the sum of your interests, what you like, what you enjoy. Like, how do you enjoy drawing a nose? How do you enjoy drawing, like, shoulders and stuff? So you just have to figure out what you like, and that's going to show.
Do you think that so some people believe that there is like a style to obtain, and other people believe that there's a style that's constantly evolving, changing. How do you see that?
I think there's a point where you just feel comfortable and you get to a point where your style is recognizable enough, but it definitely is evolving always, because there's a lot of stuff that I'm enjoying right now that I didn't like 1 year ago.
Yeah, well, I mean, we were even talking about that earlier with, like, just over the year of learning, how you got more comfortable with, like, perspective, right? And, like, impacted, like, your backgrounds. And now backgrounds are, like, popping off.
Getting those fundamentals right, it took me a lot of time to understand them. And I'm still learning a lot. Like, I suck at lighting, for example, and I'm still trying to understand it. But as soon as I understand these things and I can apply them to my art, I get more comfortable, like, drawing, like, let's say, perspective. It used to be a huge challenge for me, and nowadays I just do it. Like, it's no big deal.
So when you find something like lighting or, like, perspective in the past, mm-hmm. where you want to improve on it and you want to like kind of find what you enjoy about it, what steps do you take to really pursue that?
I look for tutorials online. That's all of what I've been doing for the most of my art career, because we don't have art schools here in Brazil. So I relied a lot on the internet for my own learning of how to draw everything.
I think a big thing too that is always so cool to hear is when an artist like yourself, who is so well known, work is so amazing, is like, hey, I need to like learn a little bit more, right? There's always kind of a hesitation to admit like I need to improve on this thing, or to feel like you might not be good at something. So to hear someone like yourself saying like, oh, I want to tackle my lighting more, is really inspiring, I think, to a lot of people who may think of that first step as too big of a step, right? Like a challenge.
I think there's a lot of resources nowadays. I remember back in 2014, there was resources. I used Pinterest a lot. I used DeviantArt a lot for reference. But you can see a lot of, like, on Twitter, on Instagram, there's Instagram accounts that I've seen that are dedicated just for tutorials. There are Patreons, tons of artists sending out content, like basically teaching their techniques on Patreon. And we didn't have all that stuff back then in 2014, 13, when I wanted to tackle my fundamentals. So that's really something else.
And so for those who don't know, like, you went all the way from this learning how to create your art, having fun with fan art, to this year you're launching three books.
Yeah,
this 2020, you were like, you were like, 2020 is not a challenge enough. I want to do three books in 2020.
That was absolutely insane. I definitely bit more than I could chew. I was working on Icarus and the Sun back in January. I was super late for that project because I was working on Beast Boy last year, Teen Titans Beast Boy, which is already out. Then I was working on Icarus and the Sun back in January. I finished Icarus, and then I started working on another project that I wasn't announced yet, so I can talk about it. And by the end of the first trimester, I started working on Beast Boy Loves Raven, which is the graphic novel that I'm doing right now, that I'm going to work on tonight.
Oh, man. So when...
And that's also why I've been kind of absent on Instagram. Like, if you keep track of my feed, this is the year that I posted the last, like, out of all the years I've been on the platform.
So you mentioned Icarus and the Sun, which I do want to touch on. That is your own project, and your own characters launched completely from your own mind. And you took that to Indiegogo, and for a long time you held the record of like the most like successful kickstarted Indiegogo campaign for a comic ever, like indie comic ever, which is pretty insane.
That was absolutely insane. I was not expecting. I didn't even have any rewards left. You know, when you had like the when you cross the limit, what's the name of that?
The stretch goals.
The stretch goals. Yeah, I didn't even have any stretch goals after that. Like, it was insane.
Yeah, at a certain point, it's like, I guess we make these people real, like holograms towering over cities. So what was it like taking some original characters of yours? Like, how did Icarus and the Sun characters first pop up, and how did they change as you like kind of got to know them more?
The very first sketch, it was during the 365 days back by my year project in 2014. That was like a random doodle of a couple. That was, the guy was a wax guy and the girl was a fire girl. And then I just developed it to put like the Icarus theme on top of it back in 2016, I guess. And I started with random posts just of them hanging out. And then I started adding a little bit more of story, like dialogue. But the thing with Icarus is I never posted the whole thing on the internet. I just posted like bits and pieces of the story. So that's the sensation that everyone has when they read it. Like, hey, I saw one post there and another one. Like, I wanted to like fit the pieces together, and that's what I did with the campaign. Like, I put the whole story like without like kind of like. In a way that it made sense from the beginning to end, so they were not like missing anything. So that because that's what people feel when they read Icarus and the Sun online.
Yeah. So one person, we actually had a question on Instagram of what inspired you to create Icarus and the Sun. So you originally came up with these characters as part of your Doodles project, but what kind of like launched that into something more?
the relationship itself, people really think that I've been through a tough relationship, and that's what I'm portraying. But it's not. It's inspired on friends of mine who had a similar relationship, and I was there kind of watching it, and I was friends with both of them. So that's why the way that I try to tell Icarus and the Sun, I try to tell from both of their perspectives. So if you read Icarus and the Sun online, you've probably seen it from the Sun's perspective. And if you bought the book, when you get the book, you're going to read it from Icarus' perspective.
So that's really interesting, because I think so much with art, you talk about like reference, right? Everyone hears, do you use reference for your art? Yes, for poses, for lighting, for colors, whatever. But like you're using reference for narrative in your art, which is pretty cool to hear too.
But that was 100% accidental. Like if I had to start an original story right now, I don't know where I would begin, where I would be like, get the reference, get the material.
That's awesome. So Beast Boy Loves Raven and Icarus and the Sun all this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you have any
and
time?
The unannounced project.
There's and the unannounced. So there's a fourth one.
Yes, exactly. But that one is already finished. Thank God.
you're crazy. But how do you balance that time? How do you find ways to prioritize both the work that you need to get done and your mental health without hitting that dreaded burnout that happens?
It's been tough, especially this year, because up until now, I consider myself pretty good at not freaking out, not burning out, but this year has been just too much work. So I'm trying to keep my weekends off. So I do anything that it's not drawing. So let's say I play video games or I watch a movie or whatever. But this year especially has been like, this took a toll on me because I just took too much work. And I definitely do not recommend that.
So not only did you have like an insane amount of work this year, but also later this summer, you had like a health concern that was terrifying, especially as an artist. So why don't you go into that a little bit?
That was crazy scary, man. That was back in July, late July, early August, I think. And I was seeing some flashes on the top corner of my eye, always the same eye, my right eye. And I thought it was something related to my eyes just being tired because I was working a lot. But it continued happening week after week. And then I saw a doctor and they told me that it could be a retina detachment, which is very, very scary. If you leave that unchecked, you can go blind with that eye. So I had to go to a retina doctor. And he did like a procedure it was not exactly a surgery. It was more like shooting some lasers on my eye, which sounds scary, but it's not as painful because I escaped doing a surgery. If I left that unchecked, I could do like a super gruesome surgery. I don't even recommend you searching that online because it's gruesome. I could not read the whole of it. And I did this procedure, took some lasers on my eye, and took a week or two out of like, I had to not look at screens for like 2 weeks, and then that was it.
So what was it like during that time where you weren't quite sure, like once you had found it was a retinal detachment and like going into the laser time, like what sort of emotions did you have knowing that like so much of your work and so much of your life is visual?
That was very, very scary. I was lucky that DC was super understanding of it all. And they left me take like a week, so a couple of weeks to rest, but that was super scary. So I posted that on my Instagram when I was recovering from the surgery, because I recommend everyone who's experiencing those flashes to go see a retina doctor immediately.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of health stuff that can come along with art that, I mean, I'm definitely guilty of, you know, I sit down and draw and then it's been 8 hours and I didn't even realize it's, yeah, it happened. It was just gone.
By the way, someone asked what caused the retina detachment. Nothing happened. Like I didn't do anything, because it can happen if you have like a bruise or something knocks your eye. But I didn't have any of that. Like spend most of my time indoors drawing. So that was why it was so frustrating. The doctors told me that it can happen to literally anyone. So that's why I decided to talk about this on the podcast, because it's really scary.
Yeah, everyone should make sure to take care of themselves. And whether it's your eye and you're seeing those flashes, or your hand and your hand is starting to get really sore, go see someone, take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. There's nothing worth putting yourself and like your love of art and your career in danger for something short term. So thank you for sharing that. That's terrifying.
That was terrible. That was one of the many things that 2020 reserved for us.
So you mentioned during that DC was very accepting. And one of the things I want to talk about is you always have drawn these amazing characters from Teen Titans and them in these casual situations, fun situations, building out more life around these characters as fan art. And now you're doing it for DC, which you're doing Beast Boy, you're doing Beast Boy Loves Raven. Like, that's incredible. So what was it like going from creating fan art of these characters to doing it in an official stance?
For the longest time, I felt like there was this stigma that I was less of an artist because I was drawing fan art, that it was less valuable than an original artwork. And then all of a sudden, DC contacted me on my email, and it wasn't like, hey, do you want to work for us? It was like, hey, can you keep doing the same stuff that you're doing, but for us? So that was very shocking, and it opened my eyes for that. But you're like, fan art is only fan art until you're drawing it officially, so it doesn't matter. Like, people will respond really well if you're drawing what you really like. It just shows on the artwork. And it happened not only with the Teen Titans, but it happened once again with there's a game that I really, really like, Life is Strange. And I was enjoying the hell out of Life is Strange 2. And I think I did a fan art, and then the Life is Strange team contacted me to draw some illustrations for them, which was absolutely insane. I loved it. That was last year.
That's incredible. So one thing that I want to touch on that I don't think many people talk about, what was the reception like difference-wise from like creating your own fan art and then getting kind of a whole new audience exposed to your art after it went official?
I know that DC's their reach is amazing, but one thing that happened with this collaboration with me and DC was that I already have a pretty huge fan base. I was interested in consuming these books. I wasn't sure how many people would show up, how many people would actually buy it, would actually show up at like conventions and book signings, but everything got confirmed when we did like the book signing for my first book, which was Teen Titans Raven. We did a book signing last summer throughout the US, and whenever you go, like Chicago, LA, New York, New Orleans, every place was super crowded, people cosplaying the characters. And that was awesome. That was awesome. And I was there in the US because I'm based in Brazil, and DC flew me to the US to do that. And then to see them, seeing the cosplayers and seeing all that was super rewarding.
So let's talk a little bit too about that thing that you mentioned, the stigma of fan art, right? So how does one, or how would you recommend people who are creating fan art or want to create fan art start looking at their art differently so that they can avoid that stigma?
Like I said before, it took me a while to get out of that mentality, of that mindset. It took me as much as working for the company that I was drawing fan art of to get out of that fan art stigma. And from now on, I'll be forever advocating for draw whatever you like, draw what you want, because that's really gonna show on your artwork, and it doesn't matter if it's someone else's sandbox. Because if you have something to add, if you can add your own twist to it, it's still gonna be just as interesting as an original artwork.
Yeah, and I think that's something that you did so well in your work is we got to see the Teen Titans really having these interactions in a way that we can relate to as maybe people during that time. You know, they're not just superheroes, and they're not just dealing with the super situations. We're seeing them, going to a soda shop or
hanging out at a motel. Basic idea that I had when I was rewatching the cartoon, like to humanize them, to make them more teenagers than the Titans. And people responded so well to it. I'm so happy with the response because I'm having a blast drawing these characters. I've been working with the Teen Titans for a couple of years now, and I just love it. Whenever I get some time, some break time from the books, I'm drawing fan art to post on my Instagram, which was what you see on Instagram.
So I have to ask, when you're creating the official books and making artwork for DC, do you feel a lot more pressure from outside sources than you do when you're just creating a piece of fan art for yourself and your audience?
I used to. Back when I was doing Teen Titans Raven, my first book, I was scared the shit out of making a mistake or whatever. Whenever my editor, which is like the manager of the project, whenever my editor sent me an email, I was terrified. I was like, they are going to fire me now. This is it. They're going to fire me this moment. They hate my work. I'm not doing well enough or whatever. But after I was done with Raven and it was super successful, and then when I was drawing Beast Boy, I was much, much more comfortable. The thing is that when I'm doing stuff for DC, they do have a little bit of creative control over it, but that's 100% expected, so it doesn't bother me too much.
Yeah, and I think a thing that we've seen kind of as a theme across people that we've talked to has been, it's about the authenticity, right? Like,
definitely.
You can't be selling something that isn't you. And the more that you're able to sell your joy or your fandom or whatever you love about it, kind of like what you're talking about style earlier, you mm-hmm. find the things that you love, how to draw a nose, how to draw, you know, people interacting. And that becomes the thing that makes you successful.
Definitely.
Is that authenticity and that joy that you bring to your art.
Definitely.
So all of this took off because of your posts to social media. So like, let's talk about social media a little bit and how that's played into your career and your evolution as an artist.
So like I said, we don't have our art schools here in Brazil. We have very few conventions, very few events, art events. Like in the US, you have a lot of Comic Cons. Like there's a Comic Con season for you guys. But here in Brazil, we mostly have like one huge event that happens in December, which is Comic Con Experience. I love it, but it's kind of recent. It's not the same as in the US. Like the industry is not the same. So I had to, the way that I found to make people see my work was posting it online, to make like editors, make like the people that matter see my artwork so that I could get hired, was to show it to everyone online as most as I could. There was a point I was managing Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, Instagram, but nowadays I just use Twitter and Instagram because it's the ones that I find that are like worthwhile to keep it. But yeah, like, from the very beginning of my career, I counted on my social media presence to get work, to get my work, and to get clients and to get people who were interested in buying my work at conventions, at like my online shop. So it's something that I will always be advocating for, like show your work to everyone.
Yeah, and I think that's a thing that people really stress on, right? Is like, when do I know that my art is something that I should or can share with a international audience?
Mm-hmm. There's also like some people adequate better. There's a lot of different social media, and some people fit better on different platforms. Some art is very well received on Twitter and is not as well received on Instagram, and vice versa. So that's something that you all should have in mind too.
So what would you recommend for someone wanting to post across different platforms? Like what sort of thing do you see performing best across?
I think that has to be trial and error. I can't say there's like a golden rule, like a formula to it. Just see where your work performs better. Like what kind of work do you like to do, and see the response and then adequate to it.
So what do you think is the most important thing that's an artist who is looking to start posting their stuff on social media needs to know as they start posting?
Sorry?
Like if I wanted to start posting my art on social media and never done it before, what's something I should know before I post my art out there?
Know that there's going to be a ton of artwork. There's going to be a lot of people that are going to be better than you, and that's totally fine. One advice that I actually got from Loish was only use social media when you're in the right mindset to it. Because whenever I'm feeling down about my artwork and I spend too much time online and I see all that crazy, amazing art, it kind of gets me to even lower. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
So that's another thing. This is cliche, but likes do not represent your worth as an artist. I know a lot of talented illustrators that do not have a following, do not have a huge fan base online, but they do get clients. There's also this side of the whole thing. Like you don't exactly need a following to get clients.
Yeah. And for those of you who didn't catch it, Piccolo and Loish and Kiana Khan Smith, we're all part of a Lightbox panel we did this year talking about social media. And that was
great.
That was an amazing panel. I do social media for my job, and I was like mind blown the entire time.
I've been following Kiana for the longest time online, and that was the first time that I actually got to talk with her. And also Loish, because I've been following Loish. I've seen interviews with her, but I've never interacted before.
Yeah, we need to get all you guys into the DeviantArt office once all this COVID stuff is done, and have a big social media party. Yeah, but we'll link that. Speaking of linking, I know some people have mentioned in the comments, they're wondering about that Wacom One tablet. We do have a caption contest. The link is in our bio. It'll be posted after this as well, but you can enter to win a Wacom One tablet so that you can level up your art and create some art. And we just want to give you that. So know that that's there as well. Continuing to talk about social media, though, I think something that is so essential, like I've spent a large portion of my life, even as old as I am, on social media, and just knowing how to deal with feedback and negativity online
mm-hmm.
is something that I think everyone has to deal with. So how do you kind of parse and deal with any sort of negativity that you have to see online?
I'm definitely not the best person to talk, because I am very negative about my own art. So I'm much more cruel than the comments that I receive. So I don't know. That's a really tough question for me, because I'm worse than them to my own art.
I think a lot of people have that imposter syndrome, right, around their own work.
Definitely.
And so, yeah, you can definitely be very hard on your own work as well. But how do you find like a healthy balance then of how much time you spend online and focusing on your social media versus putting your efforts into other things?
When I have work to do and when I have drawings to deliver, I just turn off all social media. Because whenever I'm online, I'm getting inspired and I want to draw stuff and I just don't have the time. And that's really frustrating. And it's not a game that we can win, man. We just have to turn it all off. Like, just leave my phone on another room, and I have to go to work.
Makes sense. Yeah. Sometimes
like,
there is
no balance. There is no healthy management of social media these times.
So let's go ahead and pivot to talking about how people can market their stuff. Like, again, you had one of the most successful indie comic campaigns ever. So one of the things that you've mentioned multiple times is being from Brazil, there's not as much of a art education or an art scene there. So
one thing that I've noticed going back to the Brazilian industry real quick,
yeah,
is that as the years gone by, ever since 2014 from now, I've seen that the Brazilian artist community is really, really strong right now, which wasn't a couple of years ago. So that's something. But
yeah,
I mean, the online community, of course.
Yeah. So when you are marketing to an online international community, how
mm-hmm.
do you proceed with that? How do you even start thinking of that and tackling that sort of challenge?
Well, with Icarus, my strategy was I wanted to make people like the stuff before actually buying it. I think that's mostly everyone who does webcomics do that. Like, I wanted you to know these characters before actually selling them to you. And that was kind of what happened with the Teen Titans, because I was posting fan art and then I was hired by DC and then I sold the book. So that's a strategy that's been working for me. Like, first, I show something that you may be interested or not, but fortunately, people were interested, and then I sell it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's a good almost like a meter to judge if people are going to like latch on to. Yeah,
exactly. I use a lot of the how people respond to, let's say I do an illustration of a fandom that I'm not as connected to. I see what are people reaction to it, and then I see if I'm going to like to print it to sell it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah.
I remember I did Breath of the Wild illustration a couple of months ago, and it performed really well on Twitter. People loved it on there, but it flopped really hard on Instagram. And that was something that I put into consideration before printing it and taking it to conventions with me.
Mm-hmm. So when you are looking to market stuff, you have a different sort of mentality when you're looking at like what might be a book, what might be an Instagram post, what might go to cons with you. How do you kind of find that balance of what would work best where?
That's super tough. But I know that if a content is successful, both social medias, it's 100% going to be marketable. If it flops on one of them, I may still take it to a convention. I mean, I may still sell it, but I do it with a lot of caution.
That makes sense. I think that you have to do that sort of testing, right? I mean, it's
mm-hmm. and that's the good part of having multiple platforms. I'm just talking about two because I'm just managing two at the moment. But if you have more, you can always like put them all into consideration before start selling something.
Amazing. Yeah, that makes tons of sense. So one thing that I'd like to touch on now is just kind of looking at that pivot from social to physical space. And knowing that you have, like you said, you were doing the book tours and every single one of them was just packed. What was it like kind of interacting with people digitally versus working with them physically?
You mean people at DC or like people like the fans?
Even the fans, yeah. Just like being able to interact with your audience in a different way.
The very first convention that I did was, I think, 2017. And I was CCXP, which is a huge convention, the biggest one we have here in Brazil. And it's a lot of people, like I'm telling you. It's San Diego, New York Comic Con kind of convention. And that was so impactful for me that I just learned, I had to learn how to deal with that many people, like to interact with a lot of people on a single day on that convention. But I love it. I'm missing conventions so much, especially like taking pictures with cosplayers and just talking about random stuff like at the booth. I miss that so much.
If you could see someone.
What I'm saying is that the Raven tour was amazing, but it wasn't novelty. It wasn't the first time that I was interacting with fans that way.
Yeah. So I would love to touch on like what's the favorite cosplay you've seen of one of your characters. Or what's one of them? You don't have to pick a favorite, because obviously there's a bunch.
But there is one guy, and I remember this guy because he comes to my table every year at CCXP Brazil. He comes painted as Beast Boy, and he does such a tremendous work. And I think I've talked to him once, and he's like 17, 18 years old. He's super young, and he's so talented. And I'm like, dude. Sorry, am I back?
We're back. Yep, you're good.
there's this dude in Brazil who always comes as Beast Boy to my table at CCXP, and I told him, hey, dude, when Beast Boy, when the Teen Titans Beast Boy, the novel that I am working on right now, when it comes out, I want to give one to you for free because you're just so talented and you always comes as Beast Boy to CCXP, and I really appreciate that.
That's awesome. It's so cool seeing... I love that there's like art supporting art, you know, in those situations.
and that's one thing. I wasn't even into cosplaying before, but after seeing so many people cosplaying my work, I started following cosplayers on Instagram and starting to get into it. And I just love it. I really, really appreciate cosplayers now.
There's such a cyclical nature there too of art inspiring cosplay, inspiring art, and going back and forth. Like
someone someone asked me if I did send him a graphic novel, the guy who dresses as Beast Boy every convention. I didn't, because we are not going to have a CCXP this year because of Corona. Which sucks, but I did not forget that. I'm definitely giving him a Teen Titans Beast Boy book.
Yeah, you got to get that thing signed and send it over their way.
Definitely.
So we've had a ton of questions. We've already gotten almost 100 questions just since we went live, and we had
someone asked me if what was my job before working as a full-time freelance illustrator, and that was I was a receptionist at a hostel, and the hostel was basically where I learned how to speak in English, because I knew the grammar, but I was really scared of talking because I was afraid of people not understanding me because of the accent. And when I was working at the hostel, people came from every sort of place, and it was never from the US or Britain or England. And so people were like Israeli people, people from Southern Asia, and people from Japan. And their English was always kind of rough, kind of rusty, and it always had the accent, but we always understood each other. So that really made me confident to start speaking.
That's awesome. So yeah, let's start going through some of this Q&A, because we've got a lot of questions. So one person said, how do you accomplish the expressions in your drawings? Any tips? Love from Mexico. That's from Botes G.
I followed a lot of those, what's it called? Disney Principles tutorials. Which they are basically teaching you how to stretch a character to make it to create an expression. Look that up. It's the I think 11 principles, Disney principles, that helped me a lot with expressions. Nowadays I just do it like naturally, but that was what helped me when I was beginning to understand how to draw expressions.
One question I love: who are some of your favorite artists right now? From Maite van Tielba.
Who are my favorite artists?
Yeah, just some artists that you're enjoying right now.
I'm gonna say like my biggest inspirations, which are Jorge Jimenez. He's a Spanish artist. He's working at DC, I think, Batman right now. Love his stuff. I especially love his Super Sons artwork. And I love Otto Schmidt. He's a Russian artist. I think he's at DC or Marvel. I don't remember exactly, but I love his style.
Awesome. I always love hearing who inspires the people that are inspiring.
And there are too many people to tell. Like, I can open my feet and just find a lot of people that are inspiring me right now, but I just have these names on the back of my head always.
So this is a cool one. What was your daily art routine when you were beginning to learn to draw? From McKeed 96 Art.
I didn't exactly have a routine. I have the Doodles project, which is not something I recommend everyone, because it's really tough to draw every day. Like, you don't have to draw every day to become a good artist, but being frequent about it does help. So, but it doesn't have to be every day.
So what sort of, then just for me, like what sort of discipline and what sort of mentality did you put yourself into to continue that drive? Because I think a lot of people will start a project, you know, you get into like a, you know, maybe a month long drawing project, and you get 3 days in, and then you're like, oh, I can take today off. And then you take a week off, and then it's over.
Wait, what was the question?
Just how do you maintain that sort of discipline to continue? Like, what for you was the thing that kept you motivated?
It was really tough to not post every day, to let people down in a way. After I stopped doing the daily doodles, but the good thing is that I had more time to work to develop more complex stuff. Mm-hmm. So let's say the Teen Titans post that I do right now, the ones that you can see on my Instagram, it takes me a couple of days to have the idea and then work it out and then actually going to put it to actually draw it. So that's nice. Like, give yourself some time.
So a big thing for you too is kind of having that accountability to your audience, where they expect something from you, so you don't want to let them down.
Hold on one second. Gente, pode mandar pergunta em português, que eu respondo em inglês, mas só posso responder em português depois para vocês no privado, beleza? Abraço.
Hey, whenever you see a question you want to answer in the feed, Go
for
it.
All right. Hey, people send me a lot of messages in Brazilian Portuguese.
Please. I can't help with those until it's translated for me. So whatever you want to answer, go for it. I can only tell people that like my mustache that, yes, it's there. It stays there.
people are commenting a lot about the mustaches.
It's very distracting. I get it. But my wife says I have to keep it, so I keep it. So Deanna Bercia says, would your younger self ever imagine that you'd be working for DC now?
Never. When I received the email, that's a funny story. I thought it was a scam. I thought it was a scam because they had a big DC logo at the end of the email. I was like, this is totally something that a scammer would do. And that's way too good to be true. That was the end of 2017. And it took them a couple of emails for me to answer them. And then they actually had to make a commission to test me to see if I was capable of taking a whole book.
Oh man. So
So it took me the longest time. So, and even after I was at DC, like I said before, I had the worst imposter syndrome. I really thought that I was going to get fired every time my editor sent me an email.
So then a pivot from that, from Damien Navarro Art, how was it moving from a freelance illustrator to a comic artist? And how did you deal with having to work with deadlines?
Deadlines suck. Because you have to trim your work to be delivered on time. Because you have several pages to draw and the story is not going to be told by just that one panel that you're obsessing over. So that's something I had to really, really, really learn because I come from illustration. I like to add a lot of details to go until the end of my day on a single panel, but I can't do that on comics. And one good side is that it's kind of comfortable in a way because with freelance, you're always doing small projects that take let's say a week, a month, 3 months maybe. But with a whole book like I'm doing for DC right now, I am locked. I'm booked for almost a year, 10 months. I know that I'll be paid for 10 months. So that's really nice.
So one of the things that I saw in that is how then do you balance kind of working art as a full time job, knowing that that's a set block thing, and still maintaining kind of your side projects or any creativity you want to explore outside of that? Do you find any exhaustion between both your work and your relaxation, both being art?
I used to be better at managing all of these, but this year, because I was working so much, I kind of had to focus on work to finish it and not as much as on my personal project and stuff like that. But I really miss, one thing that I really miss is doing studies, random studies and stuff that is not going to be posted on social media. It's just for me to learn something new. I really, really miss doing that, but I just don't have the time.
So until
I'm done with my deadlines right now, I know that I won't have time to personal projects or whatever.
Yeah, you got to lock in.
Yeah, exactly.
So the Troy boy wants to know, what are your advice to people who lost their passion or for someone that wants to pursue art and stop chasing art as a dream because of their priorities? And they want to send much love from the Philippines.
I wish I could go to a convention in the Philippines. And I've received tons of messages of very kind messages from the Philippines. What was the question again? What do you do when you lose the passion for it? For me, what worked for me was making myself draw because I was not drawing. It was not because of priorities. It was because of just laziness. And so I made myself draw every day. That's what worked for me. I can't say there's an answer for everyone. You just have to find a way to put that back into your life somehow. And there's, it's not like you wasted time or whatever. It's not a competition. You're not losing to anyone. You can just go back to drawing any time. By the way, Ryan Potter, the guy who does Beast Boy on the series Titans, he just said hi. Hi, man. He's a super chill guy. I love him.
I love when you see people you know in the chat, right? Like, it's always a nice feeling, right? When they connect through there, it's always fun seeing their name like pop up down there and just being like, oh, I know that person.
what's the payment process of publishing a book like? Love your work. For publishing in the US, you get an advancement payment before you start working on the book, which is basically the company saying, hey, you're going to be locked in to work for me for the next couple of months, and I'm paying you to be locked in, to be working. And then you receive this payment, and after the book is released, after a couple of months, it's maybe 3 months, 6 months, you receive royalties, which is based on how much that book sold.
All right. So we've got time for just a few more questions before we wrap things up.
Send some questions because they're really funny to answer.
Yeah. You save some? Whatever ones you see, we're more than welcome.
Damn, I saw so many good ones.
So I saw one that I'll just ask from the community that I thought was really good. How was your experience as a Latino in the art industry? And that's from Fried Tater Tots.
That's a good question. But I don't think I've been through any sort of, can't think of any specific moment that I was reminded of that I'm a Latino working on the US industry. But I'm always reminded that I'm a Brazilian working on the US industry, and because the industry in the US is just so different from the one in Brazil.
Makes sense. I see a lot of people asking for things about, like, how do you create atmosphere in a piece?
That's a good question. I always try to have a color palette decided before working on the illustration. So let's say I go to one of those, let's say I go to Pinterest and then I find a really good photo and I try to, how can I explain that? I try to sum up that pretty picture in just one gradient. And then I put that gradient on my drawing and then I start my color palette from there. And so all the colors that I'm adding there are going to obey that first gradient. So that kind of create that atmosphere. Does that make sense?
That's amazing. Yeah. I don't think I've ever heard someone put it that way.
Just pick colors and then like create stuff out of the blue, but I'm not that proficient yet.
I do the Procreate, like take a picture and it makes my little color wheel. And I'm like, all right, these are the things I'm going to use.
People asking me about my tattoos. I just tattoo whatever I like. Like, there's not a really deep meaning behind them.
Yeah, I saw our producer Jules asking for a tattoo tour later. So,
people asking what kind of tools do I use for my digital art? I use a Cintiq. Right now, I'm using a Cintiq. It's a mobile 24 inches, which is over there. And I use Photoshop and Paint2Sign mostly.
Nice. Those are good ones. So a question I saw regarding social media and marketing, both kind of combined, is from Moon and Aquarius. They say, how do you get a name or get big as an artist? It seems very daunting to start.
Definitely don't focus on building a name, because that's going to happen. It's not something too much that you control. You just post stuff, and at some point you have a name, you have a brand or a style. It all goes back to the same thing, like brand or style or name. So don't focus on that. What was the other question? Because it was a two-part question.
It was how do you build a name and how do you grow an audience?
Okay, I think it's mostly about not growing a name, but like understanding who you are as an artist, like what you want to draw, what you want to show to people. But don't focus on that. Don't focus on name or style, because that's the stuff that it's not worth pursuing. And the way that you grow an audience nowadays is really tough, because social media are super crowded. But fan art always helps, like I said before, but draw fan art of stuff that you really like. Because if you're just drawing fan art because you want the audience, it's noticeable that it's not interesting enough. So draw stuff that you actually like, and try to see what's trending. So let's say it's not that I'm going to draw everything that is trending, but if it's something is trending and I happen to like that stuff, I'm definitely going to draw it. So let's say the 80s game for the Nintendo Switch. I don't know if you play that. Yeah. But it's
love
it's
Hades. Awesome. That art is gorgeous.
I'm having such a great time, and I'm definitely drawing fan art of it.
Well, what's your training. Favorite? What's your favorite weapon in it? I have to know.
I just keep with the same sword, man. I don't use weapons a lot.
I love the gauntlets.
The basics.
It's so good, but the art in that is amazing. I've been following a bunch of the different artists who created art.
I love all the fan art, man.
Oof. It's so good. So good.
I haven't finished the game. I saw a fan art. It was like kind of a combination with Aphrodite weapon stuff, like a kind of a bow. I don't know if that's the thing, but I loved it.
Mm. Yeah, that game, I've gotten to the end a couple times, but it just keeps going. Like there's more and more, and there's still stuff I haven't unlocked, and I don't know how that happens. It's like there's so many mysteries in that game. It's beautiful.
Piccolo, have you ever thought of living elsewhere in the world because of the possibility that being an artist can provide? I've thought of living somewhere else, specifically the US, because most of my clients and the conventions are all in the US. I have to travel to the US at least 5 times a year. And it's not like, it's not a quick travel, but like I actually spend a lot of money like with Airbnb and flying, all that stuff. So moving to the US will be really reasonable for me. And I was actually waiting to see how the election was going to go before I took any decisions, but I think it's going to be all right.
If you could live anywhere in the world, where would you want to live?
Dude, I would live, there's one place in the US I absolutely loved, and I never felt like that anywhere else. Because one thing that I like about the US is that it's very similar to Brazil. Because we, in Brazil, we emulate a lot of American culture. I felt more welcome in the US. I felt much more like an outsider when I was anywhere in Europe. I felt much more like a foreigner, even though I was having fun. So the one place that I would move right now, if I could, would be Portland in the U.S. Because I love that city. That city had something different, man. I just love it. Seattle also has the same energy of Portland, but Seattle, the weather in Seattle is terrible.
You're not wrong. I used to live in Seattle, so I know.
asking, do you ever worry about copyright issues on your art? No, but... I don't know if you guys remember, but I did a zine, a Teen Titans zine, that I could not sell online. I just sold it on conventions, because if I sold online, that could potentially be a problem with DC, because it's a publication, especially after I was hired by DC, because when I did the zine, I wasn't a DC employee. So after I was hired by them, it could be a problem to sell a publication online. I once had some artwork taken out of my Redbubble when I used to have Redbubble because of copyright infringement, but that's okay. That's something that just happens.
That's always a tough balance when you're creating fan art, is definitely finding like what can you sell, what can't you, and trying to find like that line. And I think actually Hades that we were just talking about, I believe that they just put out a statement that said that you can create fan art. I have to double check that, but I think that they're being really supportive of their fan art community.
And it depends. It also depends on the property that you're drawing fan art of. I've heard that Game of Thrones property is really tough on copyright infringement. I've heard that Disney can be a problem. And there's another one, Warner Bros. Warner Bros. When it comes to stuff like Harry Potter and stuff like that, they can be a problem. But like DC Comics, Marvel, a lot of brands, they treat fan art as advertisement for their stuff. So it's kind of gray area legally, but they are all right with it. Someone asked, how does Icarus and the Sun end? And I'm not going to tell that, but the way that I did it at the ending was, and I'm quite proud of that, like this is Icarus and the Sun is my favorite work out of every graphic novel that I've done. The way that it ends, you have to read the whole story to understand it. And it's not like, they get together at the end. It's not like that. It's not something that you can just spoil to people. It won't make sense if you just spoil to people how it ends.
It's not an M. Night Shyamalan like twist at the end.
Exactly. Like, I had to make sure that wouldn't happen. Like, I wouldn't like to have just spoilers online.
Well, I think that we're coming to the end of our hour, but thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much for answering all these questions. Thank you, everyone who asked questions. There are so many.
That was great.
Please leave them on the journal and like let us know what these questions are. But thank you for joining us. Where across the entire internet can people find you and find your art?
You can find me as Gabriel Piccolo everywhere.
There we go. Makes it easy. And don't forget that you guys can all enter the caption contest to caption a piece of Gabriel's work, potentially win a Wacom One tablet to help you with your work. And thank you for watching. Make sure to like, subscribe, all that stuff on DeviantArt so that we can continue to make products like this, continue to interview awesome artists like Gabriel, and have a great weekend.
Thank you so much, everyone. That was great.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. Have a good one.